Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds good. Thank you.
Welcome to another segment of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Today's show is about racial hoaxes. Why is it always a black man? It is said that many times when people have lied about being attacked in the past, they're very quick to say a black man or a black woman did it. Clearly, the accusations contribute to racial profiling. African Americans are more likely to be suspected of crimes and therefore more likely to be searched, arrested, and incarcerated for crimes even when they did not commit them. I'm going to start off by talking about the story that's in the news this week. A woman in Vancouver said that she had been attacked. The news headlines read, did woman pour acid on her face and say black woman did it? It appears that after launching a massive manhunt for a crazed black woman that threw acid in a Vancouver woman's face, police say Bethany Storrow made the whole story up. She's a deaf woman who initially made claims that a black woman had approached her in the parking lot outside of a Starbucks and said, "Hey, pretty woman," and then threw acid in her face. A reporter became suspicious of Mrs. Storrow's story when she turned down the opportunity to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show. And then another reporter asked her, "If you're deaf, how is it that you heard what your attacker said?" And then the third red flag appeared when there was a large group of people in the park across the street from this parking lot. And there was a lot of homeless people there at that time, and no one saw Ms. Storrow be attacked. So that caused, suspicion, which began to unravel this story of the attack. And it's still questionable as to why Ms. Storrow did it in the first place. We're going to bring my guest on, Mr. A.J. Houston. He's an author, poet, and motivational speaker, and no stranger to Center Stage. Welcome, A.J.
Hey, what's up? What's up? How's it going?
Good. Listen, we're just talking about racial hoaxes. Why is it always the black man? What's your take on that? Why is it always the black man?
Well, I think, you know, you look around and see who's more apt to do such a crime. So that's who you blame it on, because it's always happening. So that's why those cases weren't that far-fetched when they actually happened, because we hear that all the time.
Well, is this about demonization of the black man, though? Because racial hoaxes, in my opinion, they invoke a fear in white people. And when white people become afraid, then the media begins to get in a frenzy, and so does the criminal justice system. So cops begin to say, we got to find the suspect or a suspect, anybody, you know, to calm the community fears. And then you have the media who then decides this is a perfect time to show that, black is bad, black is dark, and black is scary. And so then you have all these things working together when all of this is just a hoax. So do you think that's what happens, that this person is diverting attention from themselves and at the same time demonizing the black man?
Well, not really. Well, see, because demonizing means that you're claiming that somebody did something that they didn't do, that they have no inkling or no possibility of doing. See, I think the case is it happens so frequently that black men are performing these types of crimes that it's easy to blame. I'm saying an example would be if, let's say, if some American group decided to blow up a building, but they blew up a building and then they said, you know, they labeled this some terrorist group, which is a terrorist activity, which, you know, it's not far-fetched for them to do that. But I'm saying I think it's the same instance where somebody, you know, somebody did something completely out of character and they say, oh God, I did this. Who can I blame it on? And that's all I hear in the news is what's actually happening is black men are carjacking or robbing or shooting people or robbing people. You know, so they say, hey, black guy did. And I'm saying it comes out so easy because it's usually true.
Well, then, okay, let's start with the lady that I was talking about in Vancouver. The acid attack, first of all, how many people walk around with acid in their hands prepared to throw it on someone? So what made her, whatever happened, I'm assuming maybe she had a bad chemical pill. Maybe she did it at home. It didn't turn out so great. But why did she decide then to say a black woman had attacked her and done something so vicious to her? That's not something typical for a black woman to do. I'm a black woman, and I've never thrown acid on anyone. So what made her take, I don't know, the stance that a black woman did it and then tell police and go before the media? Why did she take it so far?
Well, I think, you know, just like a lot of people that get caught up, I'm saying we see the same thing that happened with the different governors and senators that caught up in the story or was paying for, you know, call girls or whatever. They got so caught up in the story that the story was working for a minute, and they didn't know how to get out of it because the lie is always going to be a lie. Mm-hmm. So when you tell a lie the first time, you gotta go home and Google and Bing some things to try and keep your lie going.
Well, you know what I found out that was strange? I looked at the picture the sketch artist had done of this so-called assailant, and I'll be honest with you, she looked better than the victim. And I was thinking, if the woman looked like you said she looked in this sketch, why would she call you the pretty woman? It just seemed like the whole story just seemed odd, but it seemed so far-fetched that I almost believed it. I couldn't believe that the world had become that bad, but at the same time I thought, but who would make something like that up? You know, and so that's where I was. On this story, I'll be honest with you, this was one of the stories that I really wasn't sure about. I thought it was very strange and odd, but at the same time, I almost believed her. Because I think I had no reason to disbelieve her. You know, because I thought, who would lie about it? You see what I'm saying? So why did she choose the black woman?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, the common, you know, it's probably been done successfully a lot of times than we actually know. Honestly.
Mm.
You know, so the thing is, it's worked so far.
Mm.
So like they say, if you know, why reinvent the wheel?
Okay, so it worked. Okay, then tell me this. You know, we're trained that cops are good, and we are to trust them. But in May of 2010, a Philadelphia police sergeant shot himself and lied about a black assailant. Charles Ramsey, Sergeant Charles Ramsey, a white police officer or sergeant, made up a story about being shot in the shoulder by a black man. He made claims of heroically defending himself against his attacker while on patrol. The reason for the hoax, they still don't know why he came up with this, but he's since been fired. What would make a sergeant on a police department, of a police department, say something like that? I mean, did he need some time off? You know, was he stressed out? What could have caused him to do that?
Well, I'm saying the same thing. You know, being a police sergeant, you know what story is going to be, what story you can tell that would be completely believable. And see, I guess the point I'm actually sticking on is that we as a people have kind of put ourselves in this situation, even though all those false accusations are of their own, you know, demise and their own, their own choices. But when you go through the news media and you see that, you know, black-on-black crime is running rampant, and you see carjackings running rampant, people taking tires, people robbing people in stores, people, you know, robbing old ladies, snatching purses, and the culprit is usually us. So it's more easily, you know, consider that's a possibility. See, if they say something that's not a possibility, nobody will believe it in the first place.
But you're not speaking to the fact that it takes a twisted personality.
I'm sorry.
No, but I mean, it takes somebody pretty twisted to sit down and come up with a story that never happened and then call the police in a frenzy, you know, get them over there and say someone raped me, someone killed somebody, somebody did something that they didn't do, and then stick to that story. What makes you do that? I mean, something's wrong upstairs. I mean, or you're just evil. Something's off.
The only thing I can draw a conclusion to is why they would pick the race or the ethnicity that they picked. You know, talking any more about the person, that's each individual has their own demons or split personalities or whatever. So that's what I'm saying. I can't speak directly about the individual that made the accusations. I can only speak on the logic.
Go ahead.
And I can only speak on the logic of why they chose the ethnicity that they did.
But see, I think we might need to start looking at patterns when people call in crimes. You know, maybe police should not jump to conclusions. Maybe people should, I mean, the police should not put themselves as a judge and jury immediately and take a little bit more time investigatively wise and say, okay, does everything add up? I mean, because a lot of times in crimes, if you just listen to the person telling the story long enough, you'll notice that everything doesn't add up.
But it's a lot of the cases that you see on TV. A lot of times if somebody's married and the husband died, or the husband is killed, they automatically, regardless of what evidence they have, they automatically, you know, go straight for the jugular of the wife and say, okay, you could have had him killed. You know, regardless, they start checking their history instead of checking the evidence. And the same thing go with a man. If his wife is killed and they start checking out, okay, were they on good terms, what happened, and they instantly investigating the husband instead of looking at the evidence around the place. But I'm in agreement with you.
But that doesn't happen in the case of racial hoaxes.
I believe it will start because the first couple of cases were, you know, like few and far in between, at least the ones that were notarized, that were of in the media.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's happening so frequently that I think the next person that does it will be arrested instantly until they actually prove the case. And I think that would actually start, yeah.
Okay, and I'll give you an example of where, I guess in Pennsylvania, maybe this is happening way too often in Philly. And there was a situation in 2009 where a lady by the name of Bunny Ann Sweeten, this woman, oh, my God, her story was so incredible that the news headlines read, "No sign of missing Pennsylvania mother, daughter allegedly abducted after car accident." And this was a situation in which Bunny Sweeten had frantically called the Philadelphia police saying that her and her daughter had been kidnapped by, of all things, two black men driving a Cadillac. They said that these two men had stuffed them in the trunk of this Cadillac. And what happened was she claimed that, you know, there was an accident involving her car and this Cadillac, and after the accident, these men supposedly did this. Well, when it turned out, the truth was after she called in at 911, she got on a plane, her and her daughter, and they went to Disneyland. Well, who does that? I mean,
Well, just like the lady, don't you remember the lady that was got cold feet when she was about to get married?
Yeah.
Got on a bus and left, and you know, and everybody was thinking she was abducted, and last seen with black men around or whatever. So they're looking for all these things, and she just got cold feet and hopped on a bus and left. But I'm saying there's so many instances now in the media because we have this news service that's trying to be the first with the story. That now I think they're going to scrutinize how they depict and how they actually who actually issues the story first.
Mm-hmm. Well, in all of these cases, I went back and studied all the way to what was the end result and what could have caused the hoax. Well, this particular woman, it was incredible where the story led. I mean, first of all, police, you know, filed an Amber Alert. So of course, that had the whole country looking for this child. And this lady was 38. And so it appeared that her and her daughter were at Disneyland, of course, under an assumed name. So not only had she done this, she had gotten someone else's ID, bought a plane ticket, boarded, went to Florida, to Disney World. And when she did this, police became suspicious of several things that were happening at the time. And once they found the vehicle, they knew, okay, this doesn't look right. Well, when they researched, they found her in Florida at Disney World. They arrested her there. And I like the fact that the judge set the bond at $1 million because he said, you know what, this was wrong. Most judges don't take that type of stance on an issue like this. It's kind of like looked upon like, okay, they made a mistake, it's a misdemeanor, let them go. But this particular judge said no. And so she was she had a bond set at $1 million, and she had to post 10% to get out. Well, that's $100,000. Well, this is supposed to be a lady who's barely making it, her and her husband. So when she posts a $100,000 bond, that raised another red flag. The story led back to the fact that she had stolen money from her job. Everything was beginning to unravel, and so she was basically about to get on the run anyway. And I guess she was just taking her daughter on a trip of a lifetime because maybe she knew she wasn't going to be around for a while. And she's currently in jail. I think she's been in trial, and I think she's waiting sentencing, but she ended up pleading guilty. So some judges are realizing that this is not good and they need to make an example out of people. And I say kudos to the Philadelphia judge that had the guts to do this. You see what I'm saying? Because a lot of judges wouldn't have set a bail at $1 million.
Oh, no, I'm saying that's completely understood. And that's what I'm saying. Since it's happening so much, there has to be something within the court system, within our legal system, to curtail these things or to be of penance for people that actually get caught doing it. So, and I think that's, you know, because when the first case happens, as you know how courts work and the legal system works, they go on the precedence of other cases. It's in the case of whoever against whoever, you know, this was the remedy or this is what was done. So once one case starts, it's easy to have a lot of cases and judges to react similarly to the same type of crime. You know
what stood out to me about that case, though, is do you know how many black men are riding around in Cadillacs in Philadelphia?
But you see, I'm saying, you see how easily acceptable that is. And you know how much crime is in Philadelphia and crime is in these areas that's what I'm saying. You look around and you see it's such a commonality that these crimes are actually occurring.
Yeah.
That when somebody claims it was done, it's easily accepted. But see, my point from the onset of this is that we've kind of put ourselves in that situation to where somebody can blame something on us and nobody would question it until they get so far down in the case that they have to actually start sinning and say, oh, they did this themselves. It wasn't even a black guy. But they've been all through the community, investigating everybody, going through the police records to see who has similar cases. And we have an area that has 50 cases similar to what she said happened. You know, the first thing they do is, okay, we probably know who the culprit is. He probably has a record. So you start researching it that way. And I'm saying we've kind of led to our own demise and said, I guess, occurrences, but that's not speaking on the mindset or the problem that the person has that actually claims that actually occurred. And I think it's horrible that you could just blame something on somebody else when you did it.
Well, I think I don't want to be too quick to say, okay, we did it to ourselves. Well, not we, because
no.
I haven't committed a crime, nor have I ever been in jail. But I don't want to say that it's okay, so black men have done this in the past, so therefore every black man walking should be considered a suspect every time there's a crime hoax out there. I think that's a scary thing to say.
Now,
men did it to themselves, that's scary.
Now, you took it a little far on what I was saying. See, that's not in any shape, form, or fashion of what I was saying.
Okay.
What I was saying is, just like on the books, this type of crime has occurred so many times that it's the logical assumption that they could be correct on the onset. When they say it, it's like, okay, we had a similar crime last week. You see what I'm saying? And what I mean by we brought it on ourselves, not that we are in line to take the blame or anything. I'm saying we as a people commit so many similar crimes that it's easy for the mass media to believe we did it even when we didn't.
Okay.
That's the only point I'm trying to make. I'm not trying to say that, you know, that we're in line for this or that, you know, somebody has just cause to think. I'm saying it's just cause that when it's said, they probably had a case similar last week. And, you know, all these cases aren't in the media. But I'm saying just like in Dallas or Chicago or I think, in June or May in Chicago, they had somebody killed in the black community every day.
Mm-hmm.
There was a murder every day. But I'm saying, so when you start seeing these things, it's such a common occurrence that mentally we will logically assume that this person is telling the truth only because these things are constantly happening in the community.
But you know what? Law enforcement has a responsibility, though, not to just assume anything because we don't pay law enforcement to assume. We pay them so that they're going to go out and collect facts and data and put a case together. So I don't think it's fair for them to assume just because it happened yesterday that this person said it happened today, so therefore it happened. I think their job is to prove that person is telling the truth and not just assume it. So that I think that would be wrong if that's what law enforcement is doing.
Okay, but I'm not saying that's what they're doing. It's just like if you're on a job. You're on a job and somebody cries sexual harassment. They can't say that it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
They have to completely investigate, and whoever they say it's against, they're going to say, okay, this is a claim against you. We can't tell you who said this about you at first, because most cases are that way, or rape. We can't say who cried rape against you, but we need to investigate the situation. So the thing is you kind of have to have that. That's the way the legal system works, but it's flawed in the instance that we're talking about. So I don't want to seem like I'm, you know, all for anybody saying it. I'm just being the opposite of what you're saying to try and bring a logical, a little drop of logic to somebody actually placing a claim like that. Because it's a logical progression of what's already going on in our community. Until we stop that, then we because we have a leg to stand on as far as arguing that people can't just say a black guy did it and it's so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But tomorrow there will be a case where a black guy did it. You see my point?
A white guy did a similar crime, and a Hispanic did a similar crime, and an Asian did a similar crime. So we can't, I mean, you might be able to make the case that a black man may be doing it more often, but we can't ever just say that a black man is the only one who's ever done a rape or a black man is the only one who's ever committed a murder, because we know that's not the case.
But I've never extended my word to be that far out of bounds, you see what I'm saying? Because to me, that's completely out of bounds of saying it's only us. I'm not saying it's only us. Because, see, years ago when the community was a community and we called it a neighborhood, there was a railroad track that divided our community. So the blacks lived on one side, everybody else lived on the other. But now everybody's mixed. So within our community, we do have problems. The only thing I'm saying, see, I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying, you know, it's that blacks are doing crimes every day. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that from the onset, what you see in the news is this screaming media that only want to talk about the bad things that keep us in fear.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the crime is either black-on-black crime or black-on-white crime or black-on-somebody crime, because the racism didn't change. It just became political correctness.
Okay, let me ask you this. But did this maybe go all the way back to slavery when, let's just say, the slave master's wife slept with the Mandingo around the plantation, and if she was caught, she said it was rape. You know, so it was easy to blame it on the black man, and so he wasn't going to say anything because, you know, either way he was doomed. So he just took whatever punishment that they gave him, because, you know, him saying his word against the white woman's word didn't mean anything. So is it still maybe that same type of thinking even today, that if a white person says a black person did it, is going to be assumed that the white person is right and the black person is wrong, and that's just the way it's going to be thought to be?
Well, I think it's not as bad, but Austin, that was the point I just made, that racism didn't actually change, it just became political correctness. Because, see, being political correct means that you can still hate, you can still say whatever you want to say, you can still have all this racial bias, but you just don't call it racial bias anymore. You know,
you remember the case back in 2008? I thought this one was more comical than anything, even though I'm sure Barack Obama did not think the same way. You remember when the young Republican claimed that an Obama supporter carved the letter B on her face when a robbery made the whole story? What did you think of that one? I mean, that was the only one that I found halfway comical. I couldn't wrap my mind around what her motivation was.
Well, see, in that instance, see, the thing was, it doesn't matter if that particular case was correct, because I'm quite sure some other people was in line with her to have her do that. See, the thing was is to put any blemish on in the Obama campaign as possible. You know, because there were so many blemishes on the Republicans the way they were campaigning, and they were talking about putting a sight on Obama, and they were just talking about targeting him. They weren't talking about a gun, but they had a gun sight on him. So I'm saying they had all these instances, and there were a few instances where Democrats had did anything similar. So they had to create some themselves to make it seem like, oh, this race is just out of bounds. Everybody's doing everything to everybody. And I think that was the inference of that particular case. It wasn't. And I think that's why they did it, because, you know, McCain had said some things that was completely out of bounds. Sarah Palin said a lot of things that was completely out of bounds. But the Democratic campaign, even with Hillary Clinton and President Obama, was ran, I'm saying above board, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really a problem. We have to show how these people aren't as good as they seem. And that, to me, that's what it was. And as long as it hit the media, it don't matter if it's true or not.
Let me read,
you know, because everybody's okay.
Basically, a McCain campaign volunteer claimed that she was robbed, pinned to the ground, and had the letter B scratched on her face by a Barack Obama supporter. And then it was later said that she made the whole story up. Ashley Todd was then a 20-year-old student from Texas, and that she admitted that the whole story, along with the claim that the letter B stood for Barack, was all a lie. You actually think that there were people besides her that coerced her to do this? I mean, do you think she...
I really do.
You don't think she acted alone?
No. And see, the reason I say I do, because the way the news media picked it up so quick and ran with it, because there, see, if you remember the time that it happened, you know, the Republicans, they brought Sarah Palin in, and then after that she was talking about she could see Russia from her house and all this stuff. Everybody was really talking about it. So they had to, see, most stories are just to defer, I guess, the media for a second so we can actually regain our composure. And I'm saying these things happen all the time in campaigns and in, you know, all the movies that you see on TV, they're not all far-fetched. They're written off of maybe just a small basis, but a similar basis of truth.
So you know what I was thinking? I was thinking, okay, she's 20 years old at election time, and I was thinking maybe she was just an eager Republican, an eager Republican that was excited about her candidate winning. So I was thinking that maybe, you know, when things didn't look good for McCain, maybe she just got, you know, a little upset. Maybe she has some mental issues, who knows. And so maybe that's why she did it. I really never thought that maybe she didn't act alone.
Well, and I'm saying, just like the conversation we're having right now, is we're under the belief that these people that claim that, you know, I was thrown in the trunk by some black guys of a Cadillac, you know, and just listen to the story. Black guys like some Cadillacs, you know what I'm saying? So it's not just in that area, it's in Dallas, it's in, you know, it's in Houston, it's in Cali, it's all over the place. But I'm saying every story has the same common elements to make it believable. Not that it is, it's just that they've drawn elements from what the mass media has put out there, what's been out there for a minute, that these are common occurrences, so why wouldn't this be a common occurrence? So, you know, that's what I'm saying. I wasn't trying to step out beyond to say that we've brought this on ourselves or anything of that nature. I'm just saying that we look for logic in cases, you know, and that's really what police look for when they look at a case. Okay, logically, if this happened, if the windows broke from the outside, that means somebody broke in. If the windows broke from the inside, that means somebody broke out. You know what I'm saying? You look at all these different things, but if you have some things that pop up automatically, you say, okay, I just had a similar case. Let's call Detective Johnson. Yeah, man, the case you had last week, what happened? But you see what I'm saying? They're actually trying to solve the case. So when somebody makes a claim, just like if somebody sued you for whatever, you just got something from the court saying you've been sued for whatever. You say, man, it's not me. But the thing is, if you don't show up at court, what's going to happen to you?
They're going to arrest me.
Right. But see, you didn't do it. You didn't have anything to do with it, but somebody sued you.
Right.
But you got to go, now you got to spend money on your behalf to show that you didn't do it. These are the same instances that we're talking about. It's just the claim that matters, but it's up to you to defend yourself, even in the country that says you're innocent until proven guilty. They treat you as guilty until you're proven innocent.
But you know what I didn't like about this case, and I agree with you. What I didn't like about this case is that they charged her with filing a false police report, which is a misdemeanor. She made a plea deal, and basically she ended up getting mental counseling and her record expunged. How fair is that?
Well, I'm saying just like Tiger Woods went to sex therapy. And I've been trying to figure out, you know, I'm saying for the life of me, I just want to Google and see what can you tell somebody. What 12-step program do you have for sex therapy? What 24-step? You see what I'm saying? See, now we have all these things to get us mentally off,
okay.
You know, to get the media off our backs, like sex therapy. And then you have all these people saying, okay, I'm not a drug addict. You know, Maren Berry. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm going to rehab. But I'm saying all these things happen when they get caught in what they were doing.
Well, Maren Berry maybe did need to go to rehab, though.
Oh, exactly. But I'm saying, but he didn't need to till he got caught.
True. Well, I mean, but you know what? That's America's way. I mean, you know, America just asks you to
now,
and then go to rehab, and then we forgive you. That's all you have to do.
But I'm saying now we're on the same page. Now we're exactly on the same page. America's way.
America's way. You know, now let's talk about a story that really got a lot of media attention. It had a lot of people, it pulled at their heartstrings, because this was back in 1994 when the headlines read, The black man did it, South Carolina accusation, nothing new. That was when Susan Smith told the terrifying story of an abduction and possible murder. Smith had made claims that she had been carjacked and kidnapped by a black man who then forced her from the car and then drove off with her two kids in the back seat. Only for us to find out 9 days later, after we've seen her on the TV for days, pleading for the safe return of her children, that all of this had been made up. Susan had a lot going on back then, but I don't think it warranted her killing her kids. But why did she blame the black man? First of all, the police should have gotten the red flag when this is Union, South Carolina, which doesn't seem like it has a real large black population, if you know what I mean. And she's drawing them a picture that a black man drove off with two little white kids in the back seat. How long was it going to take for him to get discovered? So there were red flags to begin with, but what made her say a black man did it?
Well, I'm saying it's the same thing.
No, not in Union, South Carolina.
No. I'm saying even though it wasn't them, it's still easily.
Black folks get accused of a lot of things, but black men do not often get accused of kidnapping little white kids.
I'm with you. It's definitely hard pressed to say that it's so.
Let's go to the phone lines. We're going to pick up, I guess, the one who's calling in from the internet. Good afternoon and welcome to Center Stage. Good afternoon. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for having this topic. Can you still hear me?
Okay.
Okay. Loud and clear.
Okay. You asked, like, why blame a black man? Well, first of all, you guys are going to start seeing that a lot more often because of a lot of different reasons, but it's easier to just blame the black man. For some reason, a lot of cultures still have that mindset, like back in the day, a lynch mob type of thing. So you're going to see that more and more, black men being blamed, falsely accused. I'm not sure if you guys even touched on the fact of all the black men who are sitting in jail right now whose verdicts have been overturned due to DNA evidence and things of that nature.
Yeah.
We have to partially blame ourselves for that because it's so easy. Sometimes the things that we give off make it easy for us to be a target, if you get what I'm saying.
Okay. But why do you
think
it's going to happen
sense?
More and more now?
Well, people are frustrated. If you notice, the country is turning very racial. A lot of racism is just, I'm not saying that it was never gone, but I'm saying that now it's more out in the open. I guess it has to do with the fact of the color of the president. People are saying, oh, we're losing our country. I'm like, if you lost it, who's winning? It just seems like there's a lot of racial tension being intentionally perpetuated now.
Well, what is it that we can do to fix it?
Nothing.
Can I interject before we start that? Okay, because she, you know what I'm saying, you're directly on the point that I was attempting to make, is that it's not, I wasn't saying that it's going to happen more, I guess, more frequently now. I think that since there's one case that sets precedence on the repercussions of what happens when it does, I'm not saying that that's going to halt the happening of that occurrence, but the point I was making is that we did bring it on ourselves for it to be a logical assumption that it's the truth when somebody says it. See, that's the only point I'm trying to make is when somebody, just like if you were Henry Penny and you say the sky was falling, you know, nobody else seen the sky falling, so they wouldn't believe you. But if you were on this place to where they had 1,000 accidents on this corner, you were there and say, oh, you call and say, man, I just had an accident on this corner. They say, oh, man, that's another accident because the accidents happen all the time. So you see how I'm saying how the logical progression of truth sounds like it when you follow something that's been truth before.
And I don't think, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, and I don't think the young lady understood what I was saying when I said we kind of bring it on ourselves. I mean, it's a lot Michael Moore had did a little mini documentation about, you know, black stereotypes and racial profiling. And he did a simple thing. He held his cell phone and said, "What is this in my hand?" He said, "It's a cell phone." And he passed it to a black man. And what is it now? You know, and when it comes to, like, police brutality, and they were like an AK-47. So that's what it looks like, you know, as far as, you know, police killing unarmed black men and things of that nature. Like I said, we have to take personal responsibility because, I mean, unfortunately, we cannot give off certain energy that sometimes we do to make it easy to tag some, put a label on us and accuse us of, you know, kidnapping children, throwing acid in people's faces. There was a woman, a Caucasian woman in Philadelphia within the last 2 years. She claimed that a black man had stuffed her in the trunk and had her daughter, but she come to find out she just ran to Florida and wanted to get away from her husband and her other children. So, I mean, it's going to start happening a lot more often, I think.
Wow.
You can Google that.
we talked about that case already.
Okay.
Yeah.
But thank you. I agree with you. Thank you very much. Caller, stay on the line. We'll try to come back to you before the end of the show.
And what's your name?
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I go by Oh No.
Okay. No. Okay.
Yes.
I can relate to that. Okay. Okay.
Okay. We'll come back to you before the end of the show.
Thank you.
But just...
Okay, caller, another internet caller. Welcome to the show.
Hi, my name is Oh Yes.
Oh Yes.
Okay, cool. Y'all must be twins.
That's not my name. I just heard it say Oh No, so I figured I'd put in Oh Yes.
Okay.
I wanted to find out whatever happened to, what's her name, Susan Smith?
Susan Smith got life in prison, which she deserved, and she is trying to appeal, which I don't know who's going to let her out. I guess she's thinking maybe if Andrea Yates can drown her 5 kids in the bathtub and get sent to a mental hospital, maybe she can, you know, plead mental insanity or something and get the same thing. But she is currently, I understand, trying to appeal as of this year.
Not surprised, because usually women, when they get convicted of a crime, whether it be murder or any other type of felony, they usually get extremely light sentences compared to men. So I'm surprised that she got life.
I think what happened with Susan, though, it was so many twists and turns with Susan. It appeared that Susan was going through a divorce and also having an affair with someone who had sent her a Dear John letter, which basically was saying, "I'm out of here. You know, there's no chance of me and you ever making it." And so she was supposedly distraught over that, but at the same time, she was having an affair with this person. She was also having an affair with his father, who was her boss, sleeping with her husband, and then having an affair with her stepfather. So Susan seemed like she had a whole lot going on at the same time, and maybe the kids were just something that she didn't want to have to deal with because she was so busy having boyfriends and whatever. But she seemed like she had some mental issues going on to have really had that many relationships. You know.
Yeah, I guess the next stop would have been American Idol.
I don't know. I just thought that Susan, though, was very calculating in the way that she presented herself on television, because every time we saw her over those 9 days, she was very tearful.
Crying,
you know, and she kept, you know, pulling at her heartstrings, saying that someone had taken her children and please take care of them. You know, so we really just kind of believed her. Or, you know, we wanted to believe, right? I don't want to say we all believed her, but we wanted to believe that no one would lie about their 2 kids like that, especially young children like that. So Susan, in my opinion, was troubled.
Yeah, but police usually look for family members who are very close to kids in that kind of situation, either the mother or the father. Usually it's the father, unless it's the mother that's really, you know, putting up a front the way that she did. But it's gotten, I don't know, I can't say if it's gotten worse, but I do know now that, she killed her kids.
She did.
Do you know that now mothers are very, very willing to allow their kids to go to jail if those kids, even if they're 11 or 12, actually do some cyber texting, which ends up being the other person committing either suicide, I guess maybe even uncomfortable, but let's say your kid, who's 11 years old, texts, "You're a fat person," to somebody, and that person commits suicide. The mother is willing to let her kid go to jail for that.
because she knows that the child probably won't get as much time as her, maybe, and maybe the child's going to go to juvie, whereas the parent is going to go to prison with her adult?
No, because I was on the talk show, and I made, real specifics, and I said, you're willing to let your child go to jail for 5 years? And, but, you know, there was a girl, I don't know, she sounded young, and there was another girl, she sounded young, she was the author, and she was talking about cyberbullying. That was that was what her book was about. So I said to them, I said, if your child who is 11 or 12 years old texts a message to another kid and that kid commits suicide as a result of your child saying something like, you're fat, you'd be willing to allow your kid to go to jail. They said, if that's what it takes to have my kid straighten out. And I said, look, jail's like 5 years. You'd be willing to do that? They said, yeah. So I just said, I'm through with both of you. You know, I mean... If Americans are willing to give up their kids that easily, we're in a lot of trouble, you know. Forget about, you know, I don't think, the reason why I bring that in is because it seems unusual that some mothers would kill their kids, but there are a lot of mothers who kill their kids and then claim postpartum depression and then they get away with that. There are young teenage kids, 16, 17, 18, who actually, you know, give birth to a kid and then put the kid in the dumpster or try to flush it down the toilet. And now I'm hearing from grown parents saying that they would allow their children to go to jail because of cyberbullying. And
well, parenting today isn't what it was 20 years ago, caller. Things have changed a lot, and I don't know if it's – I really don't know what it contributed to, but it has changed. And parents are not holding or not taking responsibility for children like they used to. It's kind of like they just want to get them grown and get them out of there. And sometimes they, you know, they don't do what our parents did for us. So that's the only way I can answer that. I mean, really, things are just not the way they used to be. Would you say the same thing, AJ?
Well, I'm saying definitely. I think what's changed is so many children committing adult crimes. And now it's almost acceptable for a 13-year-old to go to a prison with grown-ups, you know, and I think we as a people that's supposed to govern this country have become lax on our participation of matters. We are so reactionary that after it occurs a couple of times, then we want to speak up, but it's already set a precedence. So I think up until this point, we need to become, a proponent of stopping things from happening, waiting until they happen and be reactionary about them.
I agree. Thank you very much, caller, for that call. We're going to go.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Thank you. We're going to go to 631. Welcome to Center Stage.
Hi. I guess that's me. My name is Grace.
Hi, Grace.
I think this is really such a wonderful topic, and it just opens up so many emotions and different ideas that I have as a classroom teacher. I feel that the root of much of this does go back to our history as Black people. I do feel that the media plays on those fears.
I agree.
Because just because the local networks report that, you know, they'll show, a few Black suspects on the TV. They haven't been convicted of any crime. But those are the faces that you see on the screen. It puts another little brownie notch in America's mind of, there they go again. In addition to that, your guest, host, was almost getting on my nerves for a minute with all that, you know, we put it on ourselves. But when I look at it from a different viewpoint, from the viewpoint of young mothers, especially single mothers from the ghetto or the hood, they constantly tell their little boys, starting in infancy, and they announce it to everyone, oh, he's so bad. Oh, he's so bad. He's so bad. Almost as if they're trying to create a bad super person to take over the responsibilities, but they're absent, the baby's daddy's not there. And then when this person grows up to come into my classroom and can't sit still for 20 minutes, they throw their arms up, hands up, and nobody now knows what to do except maybe incarcerate the child. It's really a vicious cycle, and where it has to stop is in the home. We really have to start in our homes raising our children, raising our young black men, and not leaving them to anyone else to raise.
I agree.
I don't know. That's my take on it.
And I think parents have got to realize that the power of words. You know, if you tell your child that he is going to be bad, it's a good possibility that he will be bad.
Oh, my goodness. That is the truth. That's the truth, Carrie.
I agree with the caller. Thank you so much. Stay on the line. We'll try to come back to you before the end of the show.
Thanks.
We're going to talk about the last case that bothered me so much. And this was a case in 1989. Maybe you all remember Charles Stewart. Charles Stewart was the man who claimed that his wife was murdered by a black man, and he described the black man to be with big lips, a raspy voice, and wearing a jogging suit. And that sent Boston police into just like a frenzy. They lost their heads trying to solve this crime. They said officers fell upon black neighborhoods like gangbusters. They stopped and searched black men of all ages and descriptions, those with big lips and otherwise. It seems that they conducted massive fishing expeditions through entire apartment complexes looking for evidence. It wasn't until police lashed onto one suspect, that was Willie Bennett, and were about to get a confession from an innocent man, that Charles Stewart's own brother came forward and said that Charles Stewart had in fact killed his own wife. So what I hated so much about the story was because it plays so into stereotypes. Charles Stewart and his wife lived in the suburbs. Mr. Stewart was the manager of an upscale fur store. His wife was an attorney. And so the fact that the wife was 7 months pregnant and the husband calling 911 and saying, you know, someone shot and killed my wife, you know, police just came running. And when he said it was a black man, police didn't even question him. They just immediately jumped on it and started looking for some black man to blame for this crime. And so, AJ, that was one of the ones that really bothered me. I mean, because it was just the way that this person went about it. Mr. Bennett not only was questioned by the police, he was put in a lineup. And Charles Stewart picked him out of a lineup and said, that's him, that's who shot my wife and me. And, of course, we all know Willie Bennett didn't even do it. So that spoke volumes to me, you know, about, and I'll open back up the phone lines to Oh No as well. That spoke volumes to me about how far this racial hoaxing thing can go. You know, that's just my opinion. That was, to me, the most vicious of the racial hoaxes, that this man killed his wife for insurance money. You know, basically the wife was 7 months pregnant, and she wanted to quit work after having the child. And Stewart, you know, felt that their lifestyle was going to diminish without two incomes. And so his way of solving it was to kill his wife. That's insane. But Boston didn't care whether or not Mr. Stewart was telling the truth or not because they didn't, you know, take enough time to investigate, and they immediately start looking for a black man to blame. So
well,
do you all agree with me that this one is probably the most heinous of them all?
Well, I understand what your point is, but to say it's the most heinous when everybody that was falsely accused is horrible.
So
I'm saying I can't put a amount of brevity or make one be worse than the other because I think they're all just completely nonsensical. Mm-hmm. But I do think that Oh No did bring up a good point when she said, you know, about black men being in prison that, you know, that's been getting off of DNA, and Texas is the leading proponent of that. And they actually have money set aside for lawyers to investigate the cases that has those claims. So I think that's the first start. The first start is to show that we're not arresting people for nothing anymore, to show that we are trying to participate in our community, let men be mentors in the community and help with the upkeep and the growth of our young men to make them into young men. And I think we actually change the problem by being participative in the solution.
Okay. Well, let me not end the show by at least admitting that this does not just happen to black people, that it does, in fact, happen to white people as well. Remember the Duke lacrosse players. The three of them were charged with raping an exotic dancer. An exotic dancer accused three Duke lacrosse players of making racial slurs and rape. Crystal Gail Magum said she was pulled into the bathroom by three lacrosse players, raped anally, vaginally, and orally while they hit, kicked, and strangled her for over 30 minutes. All the lacrosse players were later cleared of all charges, and they believe that the DA at that time really was trying to get reelected, and he used this as a case in which he was going to, get reelected. And so, so it does happen in that instance where black people do sometimes accuse white people. And also remember Tawana Brawley, New York, 1987. When she was 15 years old, she claimed that she had been raped and beaten by police and placed in a plastic bag and smeared with fecal matter and with racial slurs. But what it turned out after the police investigation, the grand jury concluded that Brawley's claims was a hoax. So, in all fairness, it happens on both sides, and even Denny's Restaurant is claiming that, you know, they've been the target of many hoaxes, racial hoaxes, when, you know, in some cases they have settled out of court, but in other cases they're saying that, in fact, you know, they have camera footage that shows that the people were clearly lying, saying that they were discriminated against when they were dining at a Denny's restaurant. So it happens on both sides. In all fairness, we do want to report it that way. But at the same time, I think it's happening far too often to black men, and I wonder how often the hoax never gets discovered, and people are sitting in jail or have even gone to death row and die on death row as a result of being accused falsely. You know, they just didn't have the right group of people, you know, working the case, or, you know, a supportive family, or whatever it may have taken for the hoax to have been discovered. So that said, we hope that maybe the next time someone decides to do a racial hoax, they realize that families are affected. It causes communities to be affected, because if police believe these hoaxes, then in fact that causes them to stereotype certain groups, and most often black men. That said, Mr. A.J. Houston, we're going to conclude. Please tell people how they can reach out and touch you.
Well, you can reach me on A.J. Houston at Facebook, Facebook A.J. Houston, or WeekendBooksTV.com, A.J. Houston, or my email is ajwordartist@yahoo.com.
Okay. I can be reached on Twitter. On Twitter, I'm twitter.com/thebrains, thabrainz. And you can also find me on Facebook under Keri Hines, that's KHERIHINES. AJ, I love the topic today. I really think, hopefully we shed some light on exactly how often it's happening in this country, and maybe through conversation, maybe someone learned that whatever their situation is, to declare a racial hoax would not be the way to solve it. That said, we'd like to say good evening to our audience. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.